Today is Monday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Reports from Myanmar say that leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other senior figures have been detained. Plus, a World Health Organization team continues their research into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic.
The first thing they did was visited a number of hospitals where the first COVID-19 patients were.
And more protests throughout Russia ahead of critic Alexei Navalny's trial. We'll have these stories and more next. Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other senior leaders from the ruling party have been detained in an early morning raid. A National League for Democracy spokesman told Reuters News by phone that Suu Kyi, President Win Myint, and other leaders have been, quote, taken. The move comes after days of escalating tension between the civilian government and the powerful military that stirred fears of a coup in the aftermath of an election that the army says was fraudulent. Residents in the country have told Reuters News that mobile data and phone services have been disrupted. A military spokesman did not answer phone calls seeking comment. Myanmar lawmakers were to gather on Monday for the first session of parliament since last year's election. A World Health Organization team led by experts investigating the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic visited the Hunan market on Sunday, the now shuttered wholesale seafood center in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the new coronavirus was initially detected. France 24 reporter Charles Pellegrin is in Beijing.
So far, they've visited a number of different sites and had a number of different meetings with the Chinese scientists, their counterparts on the Chinese investigation team. And the first thing they did was visited a number of hospitals where the first COVID-19 patients were treated, and they had exchanges in those with doctors and staff of people who were there at the initial outbreak in Wuhan. But obviously, this weekend they also visited the Huanan market. This wholesale market, which is believed to be the epicenter of this pandemic, and that was shut down over a year ago and completely disinfected. A majority of the first initial cases of COVID-19 had links to this market, and among the various hundreds of different stalls that were at Huanan Market, some of those markets dealt in the wildlife trade. So one of the theories put forward is that potentially the virus may have jumped the species barrier from animals to humans in that particular market, but their job will be to determine whether that's actually the possibility. Other things that they visited, they also visited other wholesale markets in Wuhan before that one, including one where they visited a cold storage area. Now, we don't know exactly why they visited this, but the Chinese authorities have been putting forward the idea that the virus can be spread via food packaging, and specifically via imported frozen food products. And they've been consistently disinfecting all imports of food. So that's another theory that they've been looking at. And perhaps more surprisingly, this weekend they also visited a museum in Wuhan that has an exhibit that's a tribute to sort of Wuhan's ordeal during the lockdown because of the pandemic, and that also glorifies China's response to the COVID-19 epidemic in Wuhan.
Now, there have been some discussions whether or not the Chinese authorities would be fully transparent to the WHO team investigating this. What do we know about what kind of access the WHO team is getting?
Well, at face value, the WHO experts who are in Wuhan are visiting all the sites that they should be visiting, at least so far. And their other sites that they're planning on visiting as well are of interest too, like the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And they also keep saying that the exchanges they have with their Chinese scientific counterparts and the doctors and medical professionals they're talking to are open and transparent. And they've also said some of the experts present have said that they've been able to see some data that's been collected that hasn't been shared publicly yet. So at least there is an appearance of transparency. But it's important to remember they're here at China's invitation, and that China at this point has done all the field work. It's collected all the data and collected all the samples that they need for this investigation. As I said, the Huanan market, for instance, was closed and disinfected over a year ago. China has a history of pressuring sources For example, just before the WHO investigators arrived in Wuhan, the Chinese authorities shut down a WeChat group that brought together a number of relatives of victims of COVID-19 and told them to stay silent during the visit of these WHO investigators.
Charles Pellegrin reports for France 24 from Beijing, China. European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen held a video conference with the CEOs of companies manufacturing COVID-19 vaccines. From Paris, France, Catherine Field breaks down why the EU is concerned about vaccine distribution.
What we're seeing come out of this meeting is very little. They're not giving much information away. So we're having to sort of read between the lines. And within a few hours of this meeting, Ursula von der Leyen came out and said that she's now confident 70% of Europe's population will have been vaccinated by September. What they're really concerned on, though, and they went into this meeting worried about the logistics, making sure not just that the products are made and they're transported out to different points, but also the raw materials. And that's what they were looking for from all these big pharma companies that they got together. They want to make sure that everything is in place so that the strategy that once everything is there, that they will manage to get all these vaccines done and distributed really quickly.
Now, the EU Commission president also announced that there will be some 9 million additional doses from AstraZeneca coming early.
Well, yes and no. Yes, an additional 9 million coming from AstraZeneca. This is after AstraZeneca had actually promised they would deliver 100 million doses in the first quarter of this year. So you've got already 25 million coming along and this extra 9 million. It's still not enough. And when you look at it, the European Union has vaccinated around 2.6% of the population. When you think of that, you need at least 65 to 70% of the population to be vaccinated for there to have this so-called mass immunization. So it's still not enough and it's well below what the European Union had agreed and what they'd paid for in advance. Let's not forget, the European Union paid some 336 million euros in advance purchase for AstraZeneca, and they are really wanting to know what's happening with those other vaccinations.
Now, Catherine, one last question here. This kind of falls in the Brexit realm. There was a lot of go-between the European Commission and Britain about the exportation of vaccines developed in Europe for Britain. And I guess there has been a deal reached that those under contract will go to Britain. But what about any excesses?
The latest, yes, is that the European Union has put in place export restrictions on vaccine doses being taken outside of the European Union. It wants to make sure that these doses are not going to the UK that were promised to the EU. There were lots of backwards and forwards on Friday and what in particular that would mean. Would there be other hiccups? But really what they wanted to do was to make sure that AstraZeneca weren't sort of selling one dose twice, one dose to the EU and one dose to the United Kingdom, putting it on truck and then taking it to the United Kingdom. They wanted to stop that.
Catherine Field reports from Paris. The Associated Press reports that Israel has agreed to transfer 5,000 doses of coronavirus vaccine to the Palestinians for frontline medical workers. Israel has been criticized for not providing vaccines to the Palestinians before, but says it is not responsible for them. In addition, the AP completed analysis of data from 17 U.S. states and two cities concerning the racial breakdown about who is receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. It found black people in all places are getting inoculated at levels below their share of the general population, and in some cases, significantly below. Elsewhere, Australian health officials announced on Sunday travel bubbles between the country and New Zealand are to be reinstated. New Zealanders will again be allowed to come into Australia without quarantining for COVID-19, but will have to undergo extra health checks. That news comes as the Western Australian city of Perth began a 5-day lockdown on Sunday after a security guard working at a hotel quarantine site tested positive for the coronavirus. People are only able to leave for essential reasons, including shopping for essentials, medical or health care needs, including compassionate requirements, exercise within their neighborhood for 1 hour a day, and work when one cannot work from home. And scientists say that clinical trial data on two COVID-19 vaccines show that a coronavirus variant first identified in South Africa is reducing variability to protect against the illness, underscoring the need to vaccinate vast numbers of people as quickly as possible. Police detained more than 4,000 people and broke up rallies in Moscow and across Russia on Sunday. This as supporters of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny braved the bitter cold and a massive show of police force to demand that he be set free. I got an update earlier today on the protests and the arrests from reporter Charles Maines in Moscow.
You know, what was interesting about this week, Navalny's allies had called for this protest across the country in Moscow, where I am. They were supposed to gather outside the old KGB headquarters. This is now where the FSB, the Federal Security Services, are located, deep in the heart of the center of Moscow. We woke up Sunday morning. In fact, the authorities let us know in advance that they were closing down essentially most of the center of the city. All the metro stations, streets were closed, and it became really impossible for anybody to actually make their way into the site of where this protest was supposed to take place. So what we saw then was this kind of on-the-fly decision-making done through social media. Navalny's allies would call for a new location spot for people to gather. People would make their way over there. Suddenly you'd meet, you know, an enormous police presence and riot police presence. And, of course, we saw arrests going throughout the day. So it's been a little bit of a game of cat and mouse throughout the day. But, again, over 4,000 arrests at this point.
And I also understand, like last time, Alexei Navalny's wife was detained.
She was detained last week, and she was detained again today. Maybe more importantly here, beyond Navalny's wife, you know, we've seen this crackdown essentially on the authorities ahead of the demonstration today. Most of Navalny's associates with the Anti-Corruption Foundation, this is a corruption, an NGO they launched here that does investigative work into corruption in the Russian government and business. Most of them were detained, some of them put under house arrest, other ones put under short sentences to keep them off the streets today, and really done as kind of a, you know, an attempt to sort of intimidate. And it's interesting also just talking to people on the streets today. I found, for example, university students who were told by their university administration that if you come to this event, you know, you'll never find a good job, your career prospects are ruined. So it's clear there was a wider attempt to just keep people away.
Charles, this is the second consecutive week protesting the detention of Alexei Navalny. Do we have an idea of what his supporters are planning next?
Well, they've called for another rally, actually, in Moscow on February 2nd. This is when Navalny will have a court hearing. There's a case that dates back to 2014 where he was convicted for embezzlement. He says that that conviction was politically motivated to keep him out of politics. There's reasons that we've seen the European Court of Human Rights support him in that on that finding. But essentially has a hearing on February 2nd that could determine if he violated his parole, which could send him from a suspended sentence, which is what he received at the time, to having a real sentence, meaning doing real jail time for 3.5 years.
But if he is held in violation of parole and convicted, what kind of recourse does he and his supporters have?
It's a good question. We don't know at this point. I mean, first of all, there's this parole hearing. This is the one charge that's on the books, but there are other ones also coming. So it seems to be that the Kremlin has taken a stance that Alexei Navalny needs to be taken off the streets of Russia to end his political activities here and put him behind bars. We don't know if this public pressure campaign will work. The Russian courts generally tend to be very loyal to the government.
Charles Maines reports from Moscow, Russia. And coming up later,
we'll be building the equivalent of roads and homes in flood zones in areas of extreme fire danger. And when those hazards strike, the damage will be severe.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
All planets in our solar system tilt on their axes as they orbit the sun. The axis tilt varies from Mercury's 2 degrees to Earth's 23.5 degrees to Uranus laying on its side with its 98 degree tilt. Now a group of French scientists have theorized that Saturn gets its 27 degree axis tilt from its 82 orbiting moons, especially its largest moon, Titan, as they move or migrate away from the ring planet. Recent findings have indicated that Saturn's moon moons are moving away faster than was estimated. Scientists have speculated that up to 3 billion years after its creation, Saturn had only a slight tilt. The year since has developed its current orbital inclination. The French researchers theorize that Saturn's faster migrating moons could mean that its axis tilt will continue to increase. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Beginning February 1st, China said that it will no longer recognize the British National Overseas or B&O passport as a valid travel document or form of identification. Now, to help understand what impact this may have on those living in Hong Kong and other developments in the special administrative region, I spoke with reporter Ria Mogul.
Ahead of Hong Kong's return to Chinese rule back in 1997, the UK granted the city's residents born before the handover these BNO passports that allowed them to stay in the UK for up to 6 months. Now, it was never a pathway to citizenship. What it was sort of like a visa. It allowed you to enter the country without requiring a visa and allowed you to stay there for a long period of time. Now, last year in July, the government offered Hong Kong residents with a BNO passport and their dependents a pathway to citizenship because of Beijing's implementation of the national security law. Now, from January, end of January, these Hong Kongers can apply for a work visa to live in the UK for 5 years. And we've been seeing, you know, more and more people have chosen to do this. And this will eventually grant them a way to resettle and live in the UK permanently.
Ria, since the B&O passport, as you mentioned, was a type of visa granting work in the United Kingdom, if someone wanted to leave Hong Kong or China for that matter and had another valid passport, would they necessarily be affected by this?
So no, not really. It doesn't. So a lot of people with this BNO passport use it to travel, to go on holiday, to go to other countries. It is a bit of, you know, people have said that it's, you know, because it's such a unique passport, it's not immediately recognized, but they've had no issues entering and exiting from countries.
Now, this isn't the only policy that China has enacted in Hong Kong. What can you tell us about this new SIM card registration program?
Late last week, the government announced that all Hong Kong mobile phone users will have to provide their real name and their personal details when they register for a SIM card. Now, previously, people that have a SIM card contract have had to provide these details. However, many people use these pay-as-you-go SIM cards. So the government authorities have said now even those people who will purchase a pay-as-you-go SIM card will have to give their name, a copy of their identity document, and their date of birth. The government has said that because that this law is in place because they want to curb crime in the city, and they said that law enforcement agencies, including the police, immigration, etc., will have the power to obtain these registration records without a court warrant in an urgent situation or in an emergency situation.
Ria Mogul reports from Hong Kong. Russian critic Alexei Navalny, the World Health Organization, and climate campaigner Greta Thunberg are among those nominated for this year's Nobel Peace Prize, all backed by Norwegian lawmakers who have a track record of picking the winner. Thousands of people, from members of parliaments worldwide to former winners, are eligible to propose candidates. The Norwegian Nobel Committee decides who wins the award and does not comment on nominations, which closed on Sunday, January 31st. The 2021 laureate will be announced in November. A car bomb exploded near a popular hotel in the Somali capital of Mogadishu Sunday. The explosion was followed by a shootout between militants and police. Militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the attack. Witnesses say the massive blast occurred Sunday near Hotel Afrique, located in the vicinity of a busy security checkpoint en route to the Mogadishu airport. U.S. authorities are highlighting the issue of human trafficking, the exploitation of others for labor or sex work, which often targets children. VOA's Elizabeth Lee shows how law enforcement and social agencies are working together to rescue victims and help them recover.
In foster care and group homes since an early age, a young woman who calls herself Egypt entered the sex trade at 16 at the suggestion of a friend.
She's like, you have a vagina, make some money and live your life. So I was like, okay, I guess.
What followed was a cycle of abuse. A recent law enforcement operation in Los Angeles rescued 33 missing children, 8 of them trafficking victims who, like Egypt, had been sexually exploited. The joint effort, called Operation Lost Angels, involved multiple branches of law enforcement and social service agencies.
Traffickers are very good at figuring out particularly what that vulnerability is, fulfilling that for the child, and then eventually forcing them or coercing them, or even if they're children, it doesn't have to be force, fraud, and coercion, right? They're kids. They're vulnerable.
There are organizations that offer assistance, including Children of the Night. Lois Lee founded the organization.
These children, many were brought up in crack houses. Their parents sold them for drugs. They were molested or raped before they could walk.
Often removed from abusive families, many, like Egypt, were placed in foster homes, temporary settings that sometimes weren't much better. Traffickers and pimps promised a better life. Egypt didn't like the life, but liked the money.
Well, I just made $1,000 within a day, so why not keep doing this? A job doesn't give me $1,000 hand up, so why not keep doing this? Walk around with a new iPhone, hair done, nails done, clothes, and stuff like that.
Hopes were quickly shattered. A friend was murdered. An attack on Egypt could have killed her.
Luckily, I was like 2 minutes a walk from the police station, ran to the police station. And they were like, what happened? I was like, I really don't remember. All I remember is a crowbar, 4 people, and then just went out.
Gay teens who are rejected by their families also struggle on the streets. A charity worker recalls a young man in the sex trade.
He was prostituting, like I said, for food to eat and a place to sleep.
Intervention programs help, but those who work with youngsters on the streets say only a comprehensive approach can break the cycle.
We have to resolve a lot of those problems that are in the home. We have to get a handle on drugs. There's just no question about it.
A survivor, Egypt wants to go to college and is hopeful about her future.
Sometimes you're in the darkness, but there's always some type of light at the end of the tunnel.
Lee says her organization helped 500 children last year. Many more are still on the streets, exploited and desperate. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Australia is failing to keep up with the growing threat of extreme weather as global warming increases the risk in areas once thought to be safe. That's according to a new report. And Phil Mercer brings us that story.
Australia is a land well used to nature's extremes. It's the world's driest inhabited continent, where droughts can last for years. The Black Summer bushfires of 2019-20 were the most intense on record. Heat waves are by far its deadliest natural hazard. A new report by the Climate Council, an independent non-profit organisation, says the cost of extreme weather in Australia has almost doubled since the 1970s. It's warning the financial consequences of fires, floods, droughts, storms and sea level rises linked to climate change could soar, potentially costing the country's economy up to $76 billion every year by 2038. Robert Glasser is the former Special Representative for Disaster Risk Reduction for the United Nations Secretary General. He says Australia must make fundamental changes to planning new developments.
We'll be building the equivalent of roads and homes in flood zones in areas of extreme fire danger. And when those hazards strike, the damage will be severe. The second reason, increasingly important, is climate change. because we're now seeing that the places exposed to these hazards is shifting. The frequency and severity of the hazards are being amplified by climate change. And so you combine these two factors and we see the projections of increased impacts.
The year 2020 began in flames and ended with floods. It was Australia's fourth warmest year on record, while 2019 was the hottest and driest ever documented. While per capita levels of greenhouse gases are among the highest in the world, the centre-right government insists its environmental policies are responsible. Coal generates about 70% of Australia's electricity, but conservationists believe this sunny, windy and innovative nation should be a green energy powerhouse. The Climate Council report states that without stronger action, it becomes impossible for Australia to act consistently with the goals of the Paris Agreement, a legally binding international treaty on climate change. In October, an official inquiry into the Black Summer bushfires warned Australia would, in the future, face compounding disasters, where bushfires, floods and storms struck at the same time, all one after another. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And finally, live music has been hard to find during the global pandemic, but we're in luck today because Heather Maxwell, the host of VOA's Music Time in Africa, has found some. She takes us to New York City, where three brothers opened their rehearsal space to let us hear their newest song.
Yes, and I'm in New York still, this time, though, in Queens. And I'm in a church with the Nyonlofu brothers from Benin. And this is JB on the keys. And this is Samuel on drum set. He is the senior brother and leader of the band. And there's Mathieu on conga and trumpets. They all sing, as you're going to hear. JB, what are you going to play for us right now?
We're going to perform Waweawa.
Waweawa.
Which means you reap whatever you sow.
And you've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a magnificent Monday.